here. So I think we want to be organized for inviting me, and I would also welcome if he's watching. Listening in particular, because he came to one of my talks about a week later. I met him again, and he understood more about the talk than I could have remembered. I'm sorry that he's not here today. Well, I'd like to continue the line that was started by Andy, looking at brain of a problem where friction is really not at all important. And I'd like to motivate my talk by showing you three experiments. I apologize to Bob Berenger about this. We've seen the first two a number of times, and so I don't apologize to anybody here. All of you will have seen the third one. But it's still an important experiment. What I want to do is just take some grains, first in a simple way, and pour it down here. This is a very refined mixture of salt, pepper, creamer. Don't laugh. There are 100 little sachets of creamer in here. That's the only way I could get that. This is a problem which friction plays an important role. You all know forms of cone, the angle of repose about 30 degrees, no matter what the grains are. Friction is important, and it really is slow only in the boundary layer. The problem that I want to talk about today, and I want to show you, is much more interesting, and to conserve this since I took so long to make it, is to put the whole lot in. No. Oops. It says here, still spring water. That's a lie. Never believe what you read. What you have here, as I say, is grains of creamer, pepper and salt just to make up the volume. What I'm going to do is lift it up and let it collapse. And what you see is it goes very much further. It has formed a relatively sharp angle here, but it has to cut with quite a bit less than the angle of repose, or tend to in general. And inertia plays a major role here. It's flowing through inertia. Friction does stop it, but it plays a very small role. Now, I know from experience, people find that a little difficult to understand, so I'd like to do another experiment that you've all seen. But it's an analogous experiment, and that is as follows. Now, you all know that experiment took G on G, or G is the height, to work for. The viscosity of the air plays no role whatsoever. It doesn't matter if it's humid in here or the eye and some others are cold, or the viscosity is larger than it was yesterday, that doesn't matter. The experiment was stopped by a friction. It fell to the ground. And there's absolutely no doubt that it makes a difference whether this is carpet or wood or whatever. In that last little bit, how it was stopped. I didn't tell you anything about the details of my G, and yet you could calculate the square root between the G on G. But it does make a difference in the very last minute. I look at number 46. But it does make a difference to the whole process. That's what I want to show you here. Now the sorts of collapses that I have in mind are indicated by this photograph, which even a larger collapse than Andy had in mind. This is a photograph I took while living in Philly, where I'm up in the north of the city on the Bolivian border. And what happened about 30 million years ago was that this whole mountainside, something like a few kilometres in horizontal distance and almost a kilometre in height, just suddenly collapsed. About a tenth of a cubic kilometre of granular material, a little larger than the experiment here, or than any of the experiments that we've seen on the movies, a tenth of a cubic kilometre run out in about 3 minutes. And we'd like to know more about how that happened.
That's the motivation.
Now, if this was a fluid mechanical problem, as somebody said it had any fluid here, if this had been a fluid filled with a little bit of pepper or something and I'd released it into water, that has a long history as well known. if you have a situation where you have something of density growth like Delta Rho, going into fluid of density Rho and the initial volume V, the driving gravity, which is represented by the reduced gravity V Delta Rho as Rho, what happens is I believe this is an acceleration phase. It's then a phase where the radius goes like time and it will measure the initial conditions. Nobody has yet looked at that very carefully, but as we told you 2 days ago, it's just a wonderful way of looking at this and analyzing it using a photograph. That plunging phase ends where I go like T, when the knowledge of the state has reached the front, and you get an inertia buoyancy similarity phase where the radius goes like time to the half, and then the velocity plays a role, and then the radius goes like T2F. So this is from the chronology here that's been known for at least 20 years. And if I plot some non-dimensional radius against some non-dimensional time, I get first the plunging phase, then the inertia buoyancy phase, and then the distance buoyancy phase, including that. It's worthwhile having that in mind because it will give us a lead of how to look at this Grandel problem. Some of you may think that there's no relationship between Grandel and fluid mechanics, it's a two different subject. Let me show you that the Sunday Times knows better. This is on the front page of the Sunday Times magazine, showing the Grandel mechanics and fluid mechanics. They're identical.
But it's not clear to avoid it. As an analog,
it's not exactly. Just like this experiment and the dropping of my feet is not exactly the same one, but it's a good point to make. So, I guess to tell you the results of the experiment, just like this, I need to carry out a little more carefully. We take a cylinder of grain, fill it up to height HI, the initial radius is RI in the axisymmetric situation. So we use a whole series of different grains, and no something is complex to know in the M&M. I think I can buy that. My belief is it won't make any difference. Except my children will love using it. We can some of this stuff in at least my wife will say. We've also used a whole series of different boundaries.
Changing radius being applicable,
representable as the initial value on some function of the aspect ratio, the height of the center has to be the same, and the time has to be adjusted. If this doesn't work, then the assumption that these are the only parameters in the system on the parabolic system, three, of course, the is correct.
Now, let me show you some examples of the flow. This is a small aspect ratio. In other words, the height is relatively small compared to the radius, and the aspect ratio is about a third here. And what you see, it collapses, it stops. There's then some avalanching. Friction plays a role in the avalanching, and I don't want to say much about, more about that because I've got nothing new to say. But the central part is not moved at all. So, if you like the keys, that it flows, it stops, and then there's a little bit of avalanching. Friction plays a role here, without a doubt. No, this was initially absolutely flat, and it's finally absolutely flat. Yeah, nothing happens there. Nothing happens in this sort of cone here. We'll talk about that in a moment. Now, that says, because there's no motion in the interior, that the initial radius can't be important. That it can't play a role here. And that tells you what these functional forms must be. So the delta R over RI must go exactly like A. And there's the theory. And here are the experiments showing you how accurate it is. It's just a little collapse from the side. The same thing is true for the time, which you see here. And to give you an indication what this 3a to the half means, is in this form of non-dimensionalization, if the particle was to fall just from the top to the base, it would go root 2a to the half. That's the equivalent of the root 2 d on g. If I may get away with saying that 3 is twice root 2, what we're showing here is that it takes 1 unit of time to fall from the top and 1 unit of time to spread. Roughly equal time spreading as falling from the top, but that's only very rough. What happens in these small aspect ratio situations is there's an accelerating phase at about 1/4 g, and then the equivalent of the inertia buoyancy phase. And then it stops very quickly, just here. Now, we can look at the radius of this undisturbed bit and come back and determine an angle here. And you see, as you change the height for a fixed internal radius, you get a straight line. And what that indicates, and we've done this in lots of different ways, is that there's an angle here that's about 60 degrees, and the region within here does not move at all. So instead of having grains initially, if you had just a solid region, you'd get exactly the same result. Or if you like, there's a shear plane here, and there's motion to the right in this case, or exterior to that shear plane, of course it's conical, but no motion within the shear plane. Let me show you another example. This is with an aspect ratio. I'm going to build up on the aspect ratios of, it comes, it spreads. Now there's continuing avalanching that cuts back this bit here. Had the avalanching, the frictionally dominated avalanching, not taken place, it would have looked like this. But you see that it spreads inertially, it stops, just like the keys stop, but it's inertial spreading and forms this shape. And in this case, because it's avalanching, the angle here will be pretty much like the angle of the pole. Here's an example.
The angle of the pole is much less than 60 degrees.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I should have said that.
The angle of the repose is 30 degrees, and 30 degrees plus or minus about 3. So whatever you want, you get tetra, salt, crystals. I don't know what that means. Important thing is the 30 degrees, the plane is at 60 degrees.
Oh, come on. You're meant to do it when I say it, anyway. This is now an aspect ratio of about 3, I think, but you can see what it is. 3.4, actually. Here it goes. we lift it out, it spreads, the whole thing falls down, has a lot of inertia from the potential energy, it spreads, there's no effective avalanching, there's a smidgen, but that doesn't count much. And this angle is considerably less than the angle of repose, considerably less than 30 degrees. These are now the results that we get. The height at the center over the initial radius is a function of the aspect ratio. It has to be a straight line because it's unaffected at first, i.e. this h is constant, and then it slowly increases like the 1/6 power. But more important here, the change in radius, appropriately non-dimensionalized against the aspect ratio, looks like 1.68.5. So that's the major result that we've obtained here. Independent of friction, independent of the grains, independent of the form of the boundary. Now here what happens once you get beyond an aspect ratio of about 1.5 is that there is a accelerating phase, quarter g, a phase where it's linear, so this is the equivalent of the slumping phase, which Andy has got this nice result for, and now this inertial buoyancy phase, and there's a frictional phase in there which is so tight and so quick that I can't get into that, I can't measure that. What we're measuring is the change in displacement from here to here. I.e. the final radius minus the initial radius. It's from, how can I say that another way? From here, the furthest particle to the initial radius R on. So that's the displacement as a function of time. So it starts at zero and it starts at infinity. Now, the somewhat surprising thing is that the same relationship that I showed you works for small a works for all a. So that's why I gave you the physical description. No matter what the aspect ratio is, it takes roughly 1 unit of time to fall and 1 unit of time to spread out. That's in some sense a good question. The idea is that you pull it up sufficiently rapidly that it can just slow out. If you pull it up very, very slowly, then you let the grains out. Good question. Can I hold that for one? Can I interpret that though to say what this man is saying is it wasn't really a very good experiment bringing the grains up. Quite right. That's my interpretation of what you were saying. What a nasty question for us. No. And so it's got exactly the same. Now let me show you an aspect ratio of about 7.5, and you have to look particularly carefully here to see how good an experimentalist I am. Up we go. Whole series of grains. Gee, what a lousy experimentalist I am. The inertia makes little waves here and then it spreads and exactly the same thing. Now we're very aware of that statement that as the aspect ratio got higher and higher, it was impossible to release it, in a sense, instantaneously.
So what could we do? We saw a different way of doing the experiment. And then I had the idea, look, I've been saying that everything depends upon the particle up at the top here and falling down and spreading. So maybe, instead of making this higher and higher, this cylinder, what I could do is bring the cylinder up here, have a plug up here, and just let it go, and let it drain. And if it is really the top few particles that make a difference, then the fact that all the grains here are missing won't work.
It won't make any difference.
Now, I can't possibly say that that's the sort of thing that I used to occasionally think about and bring my pre-existing photo to John Myers. He's listening to what I have to say, and he says, you know, you see how okay that would work.
In this case, I guess I was just lucky. And this is the experiment that I've just indicated. As the aspect ratio, or an extended aspect ratio, increased, we took away all these grains, and then, of course, we could release the plug and get over the bad experimental technique, which the gentleman very correctly said. And What happened was, there the solid symbols, where the capital H is greater than zero, it dovetailed nicely into here, and dovetailed here. Now this is rather surprising. What I'm saying is that all this interior material makes no difference to the height of the centre, and it makes no difference to how far it goes. But it must make a heck of a lot of difference to the shape of the deposit. It makes a difference whether I deposit a tenth of a unit of stuff or a whole unit of stuff. And it sure enough does. But it doesn't make a difference to these two extremities. This is an indication of the different shapes. This is for a relatively small aspect ratio with the top that's undisturbed. And then as the aspect ratio increases, it changes. I non-dimensionalized this, so it's the height over the height at infinity divided by the radius over the radius at infinity, so it goes through these two points. But you see in this axisymmetric case, it never lies one across the other. As the aspect ratio changes, so does this functional form.
Yes, Tom? Does that imply that if I went to the top layer inside the cylinder and I painted the outermost particles red in that top layer, that those would be the particles I would find at the rim at the end of the experiment?
Good question, Tom.
It's almost true. In actual fact, what happens is the particles pretty close to the top come out of the rim. Absolutely right. Yeah. It's not absolutely the top, but it's a little down from the top, close to the top. A related statement is, and I'll say this a fluid mechanical way, the particles that start on the surface end up on the surface. So the particles that you see here have been here, and what you see here have been all the top ones and down to, depends on the aspect ratio, but let's say down to here. These particles on the surface have been overrun, and they're underneath the surface.
And I have a photo I'll show you. Now I'd like to just say a few things for two-dimensional cases. Let me show you a two-dimensional situation. These are grains, and these are coloured grains, but exactly the same grains going off into air. Whoops. Sorry, I did the wrong one. My apologies. This is real time. I'm sorry, the other ones were multiplied by a factor of 50. This is real time. Of course, you couldn't have anticipated that. Let me do it again. So we're seeing real time, and this must be 20 centimetres if you want to. Oh, come on. Here we go. Now, I showed this to Jim Langer yesterday, and he made a fabulous point, I thought, which was that he said, this is just a topological rearrangement. There's no mixing that takes place here. That was a lovely little comment. But you see, here's the black line that came along here, the white line that comes here, the pink line. There's no crossing between those lines. It's just a topological rearrangement. This indicates, now here's some velocity vectors that were put on. This is all in two dimensions. Initially there is a fall. Of course at the front here it has to go forward a little bit, and you see the velocity profile. We've talked quite a bit today about, in this meeting about velocity profiles here, some real velocity profiles, rather than those that are calculated one way or another. This, I don't know how well you can see this. Andy, can you see this?
Yes.
Yeah, it's something. You can see it wonderfully here, but you don't normally see it. This is again, it starts, and you can see, because we've had a rather long time lapse, that this bit is stationary and this bit is moving. And there's an interface between the stationary and the moving bit, and it all ends when the interface comes up and is equal to the free surface. These are now the results using the same sort of dimensional analysis ideas And the only thing that is of interest, aside from the fact that here it's linear again, as it must be, that here the power law is the two-thirds, with the one-half power law in an anti-symmetric case. The time is virtually exactly the same. Before it was 3/8, here it's 3.35, showing a little bit of difference due to the geometry. Now, one thing that's very surprising about the two-dimensional case is that when you get the deposits, as you see here, low aspect ratio, increasing aspect ratio, again non-dimensionalized, so that it has to go through 1:1. As you can see here, once the aspect ratio is sufficiently high, they seem to be lying one on top of the other. And sure enough, if I get rid of all the low aspect ratios, here they seem to lie together quite well. There's some sort of similarity, form of solution underneath that, which I don't totally yet understand. We can do exactly the same thing, flowing down an inclined plane with the angle less than the angle of the plane. Of course, it's breaking the angle of the plane, and other people have been talking about today, and it won't, this meeting, and it won't stop. But here the important thing is that it stops, and again, the displacement normalized against the aspect ratio takes these forms. First it's got to be linear, then it goes like the two-thirds, the two-dimensional result, which is two-dimensional down an inclined plane, with coefficients that depend on the tan of the angle. Now, I'd like to show you this two-dimensional one again, just to put it into your mind. And now what I'm going to do is show you this same experiment with the following differences. Instead of having dry grains here, I'm going to have totally saturated with water grains. And I make sure it's done well by adding just this little sliver and putting in water and making sure it's all good, and then I add another sliver and another little, and on and I go. So there are no air bubbles and there's no variation with height. And I'm going to put this water-saturated granular material into water, or let it collapse into water. And there are two questions which I'm going to ask you. One is the length scale of the runoff in the wet case shorter, roughly the same as longer than the dry case? So here's the development of embarrassment. You can see for yourself if it's the wet angle. The next question I'd like you to think about is the time for the experiment. Shorter. Longer than for this one. Okay? Now I won't do this one again because I've already done it, but this is now the two-dimensional experiment, and I've already answered one of your questions. Right? The length scale must be about the same, because otherwise I would have moved the camera either in or out. But I use the same aspect ratio, gives that away. The time scale, you'll see, it's again in real time. The gravity current, a thin gravity current. Time scale is much, much longer. The process is totally different. There's real slumping in some sense, the important dilatation and then flowing. And the thing that's remarkable is not only is the length scale pretty much the same, this shape is pretty much the same. But the beginning and the end is the same. Takes much, much longer to do it. It takes much longer, a much different process. Yes, sorry, Mama. I don't think so. I don't think that's important. It's true, we don't have a huge tank and it would be nice to get much. No, I don't think it interacts with the free surface at all. But I haven't done that experiment, so I can't say that. Now, theoretical explanation. The chairman says I have no more time, so I can't give you the theoretical explanation. I had it all prepared. I've been
work on granular media has friction as the dominant flow. None of those theories can work. There are some people, obviously the dominant one, who have looked at particles following some way, and they can't get the same results. And the reason they can't get the same results is because friction is going to be built there. Another technique that has frequently been used is to have shallow water theory. Well, again, friction plays an important role, and so that can't explain everything here. And in particular, it takes great faith, more than any mathematical physicist, to believe that initially this is shallow water theory. It's an infinite flood, not a small flood. But what you can say is that initially it falls down and it's inertial. Then, after 1 minute of time, it's not badly approximated by shallow water. So John Hinch, my colleague at the appendix, is a very well put in took that line, and he said more or less, let it drop, it's the free inertial drop. And then let me write down the shallow water equation, and as a source term, I'll show that these particles that come down get fed just the sort of height that I would like, and just the sort of velocity that I would like to get a result. But to put it another way, you just made an inverse problem of it. Another result that I have to get. Can I put in or evaluate what the height of the layer should be and what the rate at which it's raining in should be so that I get the right result? And you know, so that's as far as the theory. I think there's still a lot to be done here, but based on the fact that friction plays a rather unimportant role.
So if I might, Mr. Chairman, just have two final slides. One is the conclusion, rather quickly, to say that as long as you know the aspect ratio, the initial radius or the initial width in two dimensions and gravity, independent of material and frictional parameters, you can work out what happens. Most important is this internal cone of material with a slope of 60 degrees to the horizontal, within which there's no motion. We can write down laws for first the initial phase, when the small aspect ratio, sorry, that's what I meant by initial, small aspect ratio, and it just goes at the side, and there have been some calculations that work quite well for A less than about 0.5, because then it really is kind of work and the cone. Beyond that, we can work out what goes on. And now,
because in my opinion, there has been a deficiency in practical problems in this meeting, I'd like to tell you the problems all thought about to which this is relevant.
How does this collapse? How far will it go? Can you cover your parents' sandwiches? Something we've all thought about. A castle on the beach. Thank you very much. Well, I think it's in the sense of sort of a failure plane, and it sits here and this part fails and it's I'm not sure that I can answer that. Yeah. No, I don't think it's twice. I'm not sure that I can answer that.
I mean, it's probably more just a plane of maximum stress.
There must be some simple answer like that. I agree with that, but I don't know what the correct one and if that is it. Tim.
I mean, the question is why is a static heap stable at an angle of 60 degrees? And I think that the acceleration down the heap is playing a role and effectively diminishing the shear stress that the top of the heap is experiencing. So, in fact, at the bottom of the accelerating flow, the ratio of the shear stress to pressure is on the order of tangent of 30 degrees.
There must be something like that. Whether that's all there is, I don't know. Now,
I was going to ask you.
Are you both asking and answering the question?
No.
When you
set up your concept of the voice language, there's nothing that I can do. The reason I'm so sure I have time, I'm going to go to the panel and the people. The reason I ask is because in one case, sun is going down to the people to the water, but not the other case, when the people down to the water. I don't think that initial state makes any difference.